Dr. Michael Roizen.
Dr. Michael Roizen.
You, the Owner's Manual Radio Show.
You're listening to You, the Owner's Manual Podcast. This is the guest segment. It is 966B always. We have a guest segment and a non-guest segment. The non-guest segment is the news of the week and what it means to you. And as always, both segments are brought to you by Persona Nutrition. Now, you can get your daily vitamin packs personalized for you. Can you imagine that? Personalized. Our sponsor is Persona Nutrition. They have personalized nutrients and vitamins and supplements that are really just personalized for you. You can take it. Take the free online assessment and get your recommendations at mypersona.com. The guest today is someone who's very unusual on the show. We normally have people who write books or who have medical information to share. This gentleman is someone who has written a great and a wonderful book, but it's about a history of another book that really changed medicine or changed practice of helping people a great deal, and that is the book about the Big Book. It is writing the Big Book is the title of his book, William H. Schasberg, and it's S-C-H-A-B-E-R-G. I put an extra S in there. I shouldn't have. Schaberg, I guess. And tell me how you pronounce your name, William.
Schaberg or Schaberg, either one. People do both.
And it's Schaberg, S-C-H-A-B-E-R-G. It is writing the Big Book, The Creation of Alcoholics Anonymous, or AA, published by the Central Recovery Press. So, William, you're doing something that my dad always wanted to do but never did, which is start a bookstore and run a rare book dealership. You are a rare book dealer. Is that right?
I am. Yes, that's true. And like most rare book dealers, I specialize. I specialize primarily in first edition philosophical works from the 1600s to the late 1900s.
And so this, how did you get into writing about the Big Book?
Well, I bought a copy before they actually published the book in April of 1939. In February of that year, they published, they offset printed, they multilith copied several copies of this book to circulate for comments by people in the organization and by doctors and psychiatrists. And I bought one of those multilith copies at auction, and being a rare book dealer, I needed to know how many copies of that had been printed, and the evidence that was available was contradictory, so I got permission to go to the Alcoholics Anonymous archive in the hopes of actually finding the invoice for the printing job in February of 1939. I never found that particular invoice, but once I started looking at the documentation, which was just huge and basically unexplored prior to that, or certainly not put together prior to that, I just got sucked into the whole story. And I think it's an amazing story, and I wrote it up in a book.
So let's talk about how did AA start, and was this book where did this book fit in the genesis of AA and its, if you will, success in helping people?
Alcoholics Anonymous, typically the founding date is given as June 10th of 1935, when Bill Wilson was in Ohio and he got Dr. Bob Smith of Akron, Ohio, sober. And the two of them stayed sober until the day they died. But 2 years later, in 1937, Bill was visiting Akron, and one of the things he mentioned to them was they should write a book. Now, the book project got sidelined for several months, but they actually did write a couple of chapters in late May of June of 1938. More as tools to raise money, because they also wanted to have a string of alcoholic recovery hospitals and paid missionaries. So they needed some money, and they thought the book would be the way to generate donations and possibly profits through the sale. And then for 3 months they tried to raise money and really didn't raise any money with the first couple of chapters, so they decided to write the rest of the book. And the book was published in April of 1939, and quite frankly has been the vehicle for spreading the word of the message of recovery that Alcoholics Anonymous has to offer throughout the world ever since.
So this really started with two people. Locally, I'm at Cleveland Clinic, so it started in Akron, as you said, getting with two people getting themselves sober together. And now the not the writing the big book, which is your book, that is, let's go and tell people about it again, writing the big book, The Creation of AA, published by Central Recovery Press. But when you just talk about the big book, that's about a book that has sold how many thousands, how many millions of copies?
I don't really know the number of that off the top of my head, but it's been millions and millions and millions of copies, and it's gotten millions and millions of people sober.
Right. So the foreword to the book, or the jacket, which is written by the publisher, says that over 37 million copies of the big book has been published. So it's a huge, if you will, endeavor that has saved many, many millions of lives, probably. So they started with two people. When did it grow to being big? And how many, have you ever learned how many copies of the first edition of the big book were published?
Well, yeah, there was 4,650 copies of the first printing done in April of 1939. I never did find out how many copies were Multilith printed in February, though. So it may be 100, it may be 200, it may be 300, it may be 400. Either way, those are very unique and rare copies.
And when the next printing, so roughly 4,500 copies printed on the first edition, how fast did they need another edition? That is, how fast did Alcoholics Anonymous grow?
It wasn't until a couple of years later that they actually broke out, because there was a very favorable article written about Alcoholics Anonymous in the Saturday Evening Post by a man named Jack Alexander. And the Saturday Evening Post at that time was, we're talking 1939 here, there was no television, there was radio for sure, but one of the primary sources of media exposure in those days was the Saturday Evening Post, followed closely by Reader's Digest. So this article came out, I believe, in March of 1941, and it was after that that the explosion really started. The second printing was called for, and then a third and a fourth. They did 16 printings of the first edition up until 1954, I believe.
A quick nutrition break from You, the Owner's Manual. Not sure where to start with vitamins and supplements? Do they confuse you? Persona Nutrition is making your life easier. They'll do the research for you. Take the free 5-minute assessment to find out exactly what you need in terms of a supplement. Get free recommendations based on various factors, including the prescription medications you may be taking. Some medications and supplements can interact by either reducing or increasing drug efficiency. Certain medications can even deplete nutrients, which can cause deficiencies. That's why Persona cross-checks over 1,000 prescription medications and only recommend supplements that have no negative interactions with what you're taking. Persona even divides supplements into separate packs by time of day, so you can easily take energy supplements in the morning and sleep supplements at bedtime. There's an easy way to know that you're getting exactly what your body needs when your body needs it. Get your free assessment now and get 50% off your order. Go to personanutrition.com/Roizen. Half off now. personanutrition.com/Roizen. That's R-O-I-Z-E-N.
So the book has huge distribution and has been used as kind of the Bible for Alcoholics Anonymous, as I understand it. Now, and I should remind people, this is You, the Owner's Manual podcast, edition 966B, the guest segment, and we're talking with William Schaberg, S-C-H-A-B-E-R-G, author of Writing the Big Book, The Creation of AA, published by Central Recovery Press. Is the book used or studied by other people than those actually going through Alcoholics Anonymous? In other words, is this a model for other treatment programs, for other drug abuse treatment?
Most certainly. the 12 steps have been modified by over 200, perhaps over 300 different groups. There's Overeaters Anonymous who use it. There's Narcotics Anonymous. There's Cocaine Anonymous. I mean, the list just there's the list that AA in New York City has of all those different groups is just huge, and it's basically following the same model of recovery, the same understanding of the problem and of the solution that Alcoholics Anonymous proposes. It's been modified and kind of tailored to each of those particular addictions. Clearly, someone who has a food addiction can't be totally abstinent, so there has to be changes there. But most of the total abstinence programs, like Gamblers Anonymous, follow the model of Alcoholics Anonymous and what was in that book very, very closely.
And if you were to say some of the surprises in doing this, first of all, let's go in. What were the usual things that you expected to find, and did you find them?
No, I didn't find them. There's a number of stories. Of course, there's a number of, let's call them canonical works on AA history. And most of the sources for those books has been stories told by Bill Wilson, the founder of Alcoholics Anonymous, many years after the fact. And quite frankly, I'm familiar with a bunch of those stories. And as I dug into the archive and saw the documents, the primary documents from 1937, 1938, 1939, I found all kinds of evidence that was Bill wasn't really he wasn't a historian. He wasn't trying to be a historian. He was trying to be historically accurate. Bill Wilson was selling a vision of recovery, and he was in fact a tremendous visionary. So when Bill told stories, he left out a lot of the messy details. He spoke more in myths and parables than he did in anything closely approaching historical fact. And I was pretty amazed by that as I kept stumbling over incident after incident that for one reason or another was different from the stories that are popularly received and repeated with regularity within AA historical literature.
And the biggest surprise, if you were to say something, what were you surprised by most about this? It seems to me that this started in a very tough time in the middle of the Depression. Seems like 4,000 copies is a pretty large printing. Was that common for books at that time?
I believe it was. And they had a whole slew of negotiations that went around that particular printing. But probably the biggest overall, aside the fact that I kept tripping over problems, let's say, with the stories that Bill told in terms of historical fact, was that Bill Wilson's right-hand man in New York City was a man named Hank Parkhurst. And quite frankly, Hank Parkhurst was the most important man after Bill Wilson in the genesis and the writing and the production and the publication of this book. If there had been no Hank Parkhurst, there never would have been a book published in April of 1939. Sooner or later, they would have gotten around to doing a book. But the reason it came out in April of 1939 was because Hank Parkhurst kept lighting a fire under Bill Wilson to get him moving on this project and to get that book out the door. And he was constantly arguing with Wilson about what needed to go in the book and what didn't need to go in the book. He lost most of those arguments, but I find the arc of their arguments just absolutely fascinating in terms of addiction and recovery.
Now, who recorded the arguments or the substance of the arguments? Was that Hank who recorded it, or was it Bill Wilson?
Well, they show up in different places. There were certainly quotes from Wilson. There aren't many after-the-fact quotes from Hank Parkhurst, but certainly Hank's vision of how the recovery method should work, he actually wrote a proposed chapter for the book called The He called it the Q&A chapter, and there's, I think it's a 26 or 28-page typed version of that, original typed version of that in the archive in New York City. When I found that, I was just flabbergasted, not only because of the fact that I had never heard of the existence of it before, but as I read it, this was Hank Parkhurst's version of what sobriety was about how you got it and how you hung on to it. Now, the reason, by the way, that Hank Parker isn't well known and isn't given the credit that's due to him is because 6 months after the book was published, Hank was drunk, and he never got sober again. So he got kind of left out of the story going forward.
And let me go back a little bit. So what was Hank's – how did Hank get to be involved in writing the big book? And since you're a rare book dealer and have done this before, looked at the background on this, I assume that and since I've written now 19 books, if you will, and not counting the four in medicine, there always seems to be someone pushing. So how did you, often that's the publisher once you sign the publishing contract, but what was Hank's role in this? How did he get involved in it in the first place?
As I say, he and Wilson were, they were almost joined at the hip. They were best friends. They ran together. They were the guys going out and getting people sober in New York City in late 1935, 1936, 1937. That's what they were doing. Hank had a vision, though, that they could make a lot of money if they had a book. So he really pushed Bill Wilson severely in mid-May of 1938 and said, listen, if you just give me two chapters, I can use those to raise money. So Wilson wrote two chapters. And for 3 months, they didn't raise any money. So in mid-September, Hank came up with another money-making scheme. He was going to run an article in one of these nationally syndicated Sunday supplements, and they were going to offer five chapters for a dollar. He thought he needed five chapters to get the dollar. So he convinced Wilson to start writing more chapters, and once Wilson got into it, he actually finished the whole thing. But Hank Parker was always the man behind him pushing for the edits.
And now, did they self-publish? Did they earn a royalty? Was there a outside publisher? In other words, did they pay the fee to the printer, or how did that all work in that era?
They actually did, in fact, self-publish the book, and that was one of the big arguments in the beginning. They were tightly allied with several of John D. Rockefeller Jr.'s friends, and they had hoped to get a lot of money out of John D. Rockefeller Jr., and it didn't happen. They got a little bit of money, but not much. And the Rockefeller people were all about him publishing with Harper & Brothers, and Harper & Brothers actually made them an offer to publish the book. But Hank talked Bill out of that because he could see that if they could publish the book themselves and sell them, quote, by the carload, as he used to say, that they would be able to make much more money. So they did, in fact, self-publish the book. They were so underfunded, though, that they couldn't get their hands on all 4,650 copies at first. They got about 100 copies out first, and then as they needed more copies, they had to pay the printer on his outstanding bill to take the copies out of the warehouse.
And now, it has really sold a ton of books. Is there a royalty stream that goes to someone, or what happens, or does it support AA? When did that change from them selling kind of out of the back of a van to being a AA institution?
Well, in the beginning, there was a lot of arguments over, and it gets complicated. They sold stock in the company, and Bill got a bunch of stock free, and Hank got a bunch of stock free, and then they sold some stock. But the whole stock thing just fell apart quickly, and Bill and Hank turned in their stock, and they bought the stock back from the people who had given them money. Wilson got royalties until the day he died. I believe his wife, Lois, who outlived him, also got royalties, but that's kind of outside the scope of my study. Dr. Bob Smith also got royalties up until he died, I believe. But after that, whatever profits come from the sale of the book, and the book is priced very cheaply. I don't think they're making much money on it. Whatever profits go to General Service Office of Alcoholics Anonymous in New York City, as I understand it.
Now, if you had some take-homes from this study of writing the big book, what would you tell us are the lessons? I mean, it's a fun, obviously fun to look at the history of it. It's fun to understand how it got published. Fascinating, matter of fact, and should get writing the big book. That is the book by William Schaberg, S-C-H-A-B-E-R-G, called Writing the Big Book, The Creation of AA. What do you take about that from for the creation of other organizations or for in general? What's the lessons we should, if you said, what are lessons we should learn from this?
Well, I think one of the great take-homes from my book, when you read it, and when AA people talk about the writing of the big book, they talk about how miraculous it was that somebody, Bill Wilson, was just a little over 4 years sober when the book was published, and everybody else had less time of sobriety than him. Talk about how miraculous it is that this book was actually produced and put together by people with such little sobriety. And it is a miraculous story, but it seems to me, and it's been my experience, that as I wrote this book and as I did this research, the story is way, way, way more miraculous than anybody really has any idea. And I'm really pleased and happy to be able to present that story of the miraculous production of this book, because as you go along, you think it's never going to happen. Oh, it's not going to happen. It's not going to happen. And then all of a sudden, things start falling together, and it happens. And they end up with this book that people, as you said, are still considered, still talking about like it's the Bible of sobriety.
We've been talking with William Schaberg, S-C-H-A-B-E-R-G, who's the author of Writing the Big Book, The Creation of AA. It's published by Central Recovery Press. And William Schaberg is a rare book dealer. This is one of the rare books he acquired at, if you will, I guess at auction, and has done a masterful job in bringing this, if you will, fascinating story of what probably shouldn't have happened that now has changed the lives of millions of people for the better. So we want to thank you all for listening. This is 966B of You, the Owner's Manual. Randall, thanks for great engineering, but especially for you for downloading us. Tell your friends about us. The A segments of You, the Owner's Manual podcast, of course, are the latest news of the week and what it means for you. The B, the guest segments. Thanks again for listening. Thank you, William Schaberg, for appearing on the show. And especially thank you, the listeners, for downloading us. We'll be back next week. I should tell you about a couple of our other guests along the way. And one of my favorite sections has been, was, if you will, and I want you to go back to it, is, if you will, the one by 947B, Catherine Eban, author of Bottle of Lies, The Inside Story of the Generic Drug Boom, and how all these companies are lying to the FDA and get away with it, and what her solutions are. And if you will, then another one of the great stories in the back is Dr. 948B, which is Marwan Sabah, Fighting for My Life, the story about how you can overcome and overcome the risk of Alzheimer's. We have no treatments for it, as he says, but we have a lot of stuff that helps you prevent it. And then we'll talk about one more, Dr. Yamamoto, 958B, You Can Prevent a Stroke. And another one, John Halpern, 959B, Opium, How an Ancient Flower Shaped and Poisoned Our World. This is Dr. Mike Roizen, the host of You, the Owner's Manual podcast. They're always brought to you by Persona Nutrition, personanutrition.com, where you can find out, take the easy test, find out what you're missing and what you can do to make yourself healthier. Thanks very much. We'll be back next week with another new guest.